All right. Very exciting. So we're doing the Chazara Shir for Kiyam Shtaros, really more specifically Kiyam Shtaros D'Oraisa versus Kiyam Shtaros Midirabanan. So the first Makor where we started is from the Gemara in Gittin Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing Shitas Rava, who holds Edim and Tzuyin the Kaimo as being the basis for the need to say Befanei Nechta, Befanei Nechtam with Hamidi Gem Medina Sayam. And the Gemara wants to know why exactly it's okay to have just one person doing Kiyam Shtaros. Says the Gemara, don't we require two Edim to be Mekayim Ashtar, in this case a Get, when it comes to Kiyam Shtaros in general? So says the Gemara in Gittin, Bedinu to be Kiyam Shtaros Nami Lodi Bai, Kedere Shlokish, Damre Shlokish, Edim Achasum Al Ashtar, Nasa Kamish Necha Reduzan Bebezdin. Says the Gemara, no, incorrect assumption. Midi Araisa, we have a principle from Reish Lakish that says that when you have Edim sign off on Ashtar, it's Nasa Kamish Necha Reduzan Bebezdin, a phrase that at this point we're all probably very familiar with, that Reish Lakish tells us that when Edim sign off on the Ashtar, so it's as if the Edim have gone through the process of Drisha v'chakira bebezdin. And therefore, midi araisa, says the Gemara, you do not need Kiyam Shtaros. V'rabanan hu de'itzrich, the requirement of Kiyam Shtaros midi rabanan, at least with two people, is only a requirement midi rabanan, again, because of Reish Lakish. V'acha mishumiguna akilu bar rabanan. And here, basically because of the takana that we want to save her from running into a potential situation of being an aguna. So Chazal allowed in this case for just one eid to be used. So just a couple of framing questions before we launch into the specifics of the sugya. So the first question is, what exactly is the chiddush of shtar, and in this case Reish Lakish, and how exactly does it work, and what are some nafkamina of that question? That's question number one. Question number two is Kiyam Shtaros ever a requirement midi araisa? In which cases? And if so, the big question is going to be why? Why would we ever require Kiyam Shtaros midi araisa if, as we just stated, we have this principle of Reish Lakish telling us that basically a shtar is considered foolproof? You don't need to be Mekayim a shtar on a midi araisa level, it sounds like, from the Gemara. Okay. So the starting point of the sugya here, which is what really catapulted the entire discussion when it comes to Kiyam Shtaros midi araisa and the discussion about Reish Lakish, is the comment of Rabbeinu Kreskes printed in the Chidushim of the Ritva here in Gittin Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. And the Ritva basically wants to know why the Gemara here assumes that we're allowed to use Reish Lakish in such a way. This very, very mechodosh way of saying that the shtar is able to be mekayim itself, and that it's self-protective, and that midiraisa you don't need to be mekayim the shtar. The application as we have it of Reish Lakish in the Gemara in Ksubis says, no, only when you have a shtar that's actually mekayim. So there the Gemara says that because of Reish Lakish, we say that the Eidei Chasima cannot go back and change their testimony, kevin shehigid shuvei nechozer magid. But that's a much more innocuous application, where you have basically a shtar that's actually mekuyim already. The signatures have been verified. And then all we're saying is, kevin shehigid shuvei nechozer magid, it's as if there has been a Haggadah Eidos of some sort. But that does not mean that the step before that is able to be accomplished by Reish Lakish, that the shtar should be able to verify itself. And the Rabbeinu Kreskes gives two answers, and we focused more on the second answer, where he has this great line of shtar where he says that really, we actually do have a common denominator between that nafkamina of Kevin Shehigid and here, and that is Alima Milsa Deshtara, that however he understands this, he basically understands in that application in Ksubis that it must be that shtar has some very, very serious power to it, whether that's about an umdana or some level of edus, which we'll get to in a second. For whatever reason, we see from that application in Ksubis that the power of shtar is very, very strong, which allows us to apparently take the next step and to also say that a shtar is able to verify itself and be self-protective with this application of Reish Lakish. You do not need Kiyam Shtaros midi araisa. And just to note that, of course, whether you're talking about the application in Ksubis or here, but especially here in Gittin, the application of Reish Lakish, the idea of Reish Lakish, is a massive chiddush. And it's a massive chiddush, as we've noted, really for two reasons. The first reason is that, first of all, the Eidei Chasima don't actually witness the event that's written about in the shtar. So let's say you have a shtar halva saying that Reuven lent money to Shimon, so the Eidei Chasima don't necessarily need to see it. They could just sign off on it. That's phenomenon number one. And phenomenon number two is that this idea, this application of Reish Lakish, that a shtar is somehow able to have this self-protective mechanism and is able to verify itself, which obviously runs into like a problem of circularity and is somewhat a catch-22. Because if we're questioning whether or not the shtar is valid, the shtar is coming along and saying it itself is valid. So of course that's a big chiddush because it's a catch-22, as Rav Rosenzweig has referred to it. And the big question that we want to address, which was one of the main questions in this entire sugya, as we'll see in a second, is what exactly is pshat in Reish Lakish? How exactly does it work? So I think we should lay out really two broad understandings. And then within the second understanding, I think there's like a couple of offshoots, which we'll call, I guess, 2A and 2B for now. Excuse me one second. So the first understanding in how shtar works and how Reish Lakish works is the most basic understanding, what Rashi seems to say on the spot here in Gittin, which is that it's just a simple umdina. So in this application of where we're saying that a shtar self-verifies itself, it's self-protective, says Rashi, that's just a simple umdina. L'chotziv inish l'ziyufe. We have this understanding in Metzius, in psychology, however you want to say it, that when somebody has a shtar written for a certain purpose, so he's not going to forge it. So that's just an umdina. That's just that's the very, very simple understanding. That's mahalach number one. Mahalach number two, put forth very much by Rav Chaim, and of course that Rav Rosenzweig has been supporting a lot as well. And that's the mahalach of saying that shtar works like edus. A very basic application of this that we did not in this sugya, but one in the previous sugyas. Rav Rosenzweig spoke about it in the past as well. And that is the Rambam in Hilchos Malva Velova Perak Yud Dalet Halacha Yud, where the Rambam is mechadesh over there that if one has a shtar that only has one aid signed off on it, a shtar halva, we do apply the principle of shtar chabiyadi mai bai to the point where the bal hashtar, in that case the malveh, can force the loveh to take a shvua. Something that, of course, in general is only a function of edus. Of course, shtaros in general can either force you to pay because it says that you still owe money. They can either force you to pay or not, whether they work with two edim or they don't. The chiddush of the Rambam there is that it works actually as edus to a certain extent, and it can be mechai of the loveh shvua just like any other eid echad would. That is the way Rav Chaim understands that Rambam, and that's a good example, I think, just some good simple evidence before we go into the Nafkamina of this idea that shtar and Reish Lakish work as edus. But now I just want to quickly mention the offshoot, and really just like one major caveat that, of course, we've discussed within this mahalach of edus, and that is you can't deny that as powerful as you think shtar is working, as much as you think that it's working in the realm of edus, it always has to be based off of the logical umdina as its foundation. That Rav Rosenzweig likes to formulate it as Das Mischayev creates a blank check of edus that the Tovei's Baal HaShtar has in his hand, but he can only read into that shtar something that is a plausible umdina, something that is logical, something that makes sense. And the most obvious proof to that, Rav Rosenzweig always likes to mention, is let's say you have a shtar which says Shtar Chabiyadi my boy. And, you know, that could work as edus, as we just said in the Rambam. But then let's say two external edim come along and say that the shtar was already paid back. Parua, the lova paid it back already. No one seems to deny the fact that in that case, the shtar will be torpedoed and totally undermined, and that it will not work as edus there when it's getting challenged by those two edim saying parua. So that's a Rosenzweig's raya that he always likes to bring, that as much as you play up the edus factor, you always need to have that plausible umdina. And if that plausible umdina doesn't get off the ground at all, it's totally torpedoed by these external edim or some other factor, so then the whole thing falls apart. So edus is always based off this plausible umdina. But within this, I think there are two different routes you can go, as we're about to see in this sugya. That's what I was referring to before when I said 2A and 2B. So I think 2A is the understanding that this combination of edus and umdina is specifically focused on the umdina per se. The umdina is the ikur, the umdina is the koveya, which basically means that you're going to be very, very sensitive to this umdina working in basically each and every particular case where shtar and Reish Lakish is working. And we'll see how that manifests itself in a second. But again, the basic idea is that you put a lot of stake in the umdina, albeit it might catapult to working as edus, but as an umdina, it really should stay intact in all cases. That's 2A. 2B is the idea that when edus and umdina come together and work, the focus and the ikur is really on the edus part, which means the way we formulated it is that in general, of course, you need a plausible umdina, but because in general that plausible umdina catapults into some strong level of edus, we're not going to be as sensitive to the umdina actually working in each and every single case. Sometimes the edus will be koveya, will take over, and even if the umdina is not 100% glad in each and every case, we'll say that it still has the capacity to work as edus, and we'll see evidence for this in just a moment. Yeah.
Is there still a catch-22 after you say the idea of umdina? Rebbe loves the catch 22 of the Zuyaf, and but once you say that there's an Umdina of Lachatzah finish the Zuyufay, then it's no longer a catch 22, because it's not the Shtar that's protecting itself, it's the fact that there's an Umdina saying that the Shtar is protected. I mean, that Umdina is external to the Shtar.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, you don't face as much of the catch 22 issue.
Rebbe's continuing to mention the catch 22 even once.
Right. It's definitely more than Eidus.
It's to me that Rebbe said the idea of Umdana because that's how you get out of the catch 22. I don't think that's how it was presented each year.
Right. I don't remember him explicitly weighing in here or there. I mean, in general, I think he definitely does refer to the catch 22 in the Eidus camp. I hear what you're saying. It for sure still faces the Chiddush part in that they're not witnessing the main event, meaning.
Yeah.
But in terms of saying it's a catch 22 of the Umdana, you're out of here. It's not as much. I mean, in terms of what it's doing, right, but you're saying it's just.
I mean, the whole catch 22 is these eight of them are being matched themselves. But it's not these eight of them are being matched themselves. It's an external Umdana.
Right. Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. Yeah, I do hear that. We'd have to see if there's nafkamina of that. I'm just not recalling the top of my head, but I hear.
How much you think it's finished once you say
no. Umdana. Yeah, nafkamina, I mean like in Cheetos. Sorry.
Practical.
Yeah. The area.
Isn't all Eidos based on some sort of Umdana or Chazaka of Kashros?
Right. Yeah, but the point is that, it's way more than that. For certain Nafkamina, like Migu Makom Eidim, and, you know, say more. I don't know. Like Motzi, the fact that Shtar could be Motzi Mamon, even though.
Right.
But categorically.
It's not like anything particularly Mechudash. It's just like expanding the normal Umdana of Chazaka Kashros that we have, or whatever, the Chazaka of Kashros you have by all Eidim. That
I mean, it's just much more formidable when it's Eidos. But yeah, obviously it's still understood as being something that's logical. But
no, I'm just pointing out that it's not really, you're not really adding anything that you didn't have before.
But again, the fact that,
are acknowledging.
Yeah. I mean, I think also just within the realm of Eidos, obviously we always understand that they have a Cheskas Kashrus. The point is that no one really questions whether or not what they're saying is logical or not. The point is that when two kosher people say something, al pi din, you have to take that as a fact. It could be that it makes no sense at all, but you're not allowed to question it.
Right. You're not allowed to question what they're saying, but the same thing is true in Shtar. There's just but the thing that allows them to say it without you saying, maybe you don't have standing to say anything, or we're not going to believe you as a person.
Right, it's more vulnerable.
Is some sort of umdana in either case.
Right, I hear that. It's a good point. Okay, fine. So that's, I think, the two general approaches that that we laid out when it comes to Shtar and Reish Lakish. And now let's talk about some nafkamina of these two approaches. And specifically the nafkaminas that we're going to focus on, or what we focused on in the sugya, which is the question of kiyum shtaros working midiraisa or midirabanan. As we noted, the Gemara in Gittin, Bipashtos, is saying that because of Reish Lakish, kiyum shtaros is probably always going to be midirabanan. That seems to be the pashup shot of the Gemara in Gittin. The question is that really the case? Are there any cases where we say that kiyum shtaros is a requirement min haTorah? So we noted that this is a massive machlokes. Machlokas Rishonim. The Machlokas between Rav Avigdor Cohen, quoted in the Hagos, the Hagos Mordechai in Kedushin, versus the Tshuva of the Or Zeruah. And Rav Avigdor Cohen, quoted in the Hagos Mordechai in Kedushin, Simin, I have it here as Tuf Kuf Samuch Tes. He famously says, yes, there is a case where Kiyum Shtaros is Midiraisa. Namely, when the Baal or the Edim or several cases that he really brings are going to ma'arer against the validity of the shtar. Tanis Bezuyov saying that the shtar is forged. And that Rabbi Victor Cohen, he has I'm not going to get into the details of the case because there were a lot of different factors going on, but it's basically a shtar kedushin that's being protested by the Baal for our purposes and the Edim. And says Rav Avigdor Cohen, in that case, Kiyum Shtaros will be midiraisa. What does he do with the Gemara in Gittin? Very simple answer. The Gemara in Gittin is talking about when there was no Irur Habal, or Irur Ha'idim, there was no direct challenge to the validity of the authenticity of the shtar. But in a case where you will have a challenge to the validity and authenticity of the shtar, so then we'll say Kiyum Shtaros is a requirement midiraisa. Similarly, we saw that Tosos and Ksubis, at least as a Havamina, or however you understand it, whether he goes back at the end or not, but certainly at the beginning of Tosos and Ksubis, Dav Chav Chesam and Aleph, and his inclination, before he kind of gets to invoking the Gemara and Gittin, he also sounds like we limit the application of Kiyum Shtaros Midirabanan, and there will be at least some cases of Kiyum Shtaros Midiraisa, albeit Tosos does not really explicate what those cases will be, but Mestama, it will be many, many cases beyond the couple that he mentions. Similarly, and we'll get to this more later, but the Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin, Parag Zion, Halacha Beis, also might agree with Rav Victor Cohn, because he seems to mention within the context of Gerushin that if the validity of a get is challenged by the Baal, and that you are not mekayim it, so he says that in that case, Tetzev Avlad Mamzer, Shari Inimugareshes. So it sounds like Pashup Shat, that the Rambam thinks that the get would be totally batel, sounds, and that the Vlad would be a Mamzer, that Midiraisa, the get's totally batel, Midiraisa, we have a requirement of Kiyam Shtaros. So that's all this camp who thinks that there is a case of Kiyam Shtaros Midiraisa, namely when the validity of the Shtar is challenged. Famously argued against by the Chuvas Orz Aro, and he says, absolutely not. The Gemara in Gideon, Kipshuto, stands as it is, and he quotes a lot of evidence, as does the Shach and Choshen Mishpat, Simen Mem Vav Siv Tes, that certainly not, Kiyam Shtaros is basically, forever and always, by default, going to be a requirement only in Midir Rabbanan. Midir Raisa, we do not require Kiyam Shtaros just because there's an Eror HaBaal, or an Eror HaEdim, that the star is forged. So what exactly is the Nekudas HaMachlokas here? So I think the way most people will understand it, just more simply, they'll just say it's a machlokas, whether we say that star Reish Lakish is working, as we said, midin edus or midin umdina. That papashtus, you'd probably say, or Victor Cohen is saying star and Reish Lakish works midin umdina, and therefore it's more vulnerable, more subject to being undermined by an error that it's mezuyof. While the Orz Aruah thinks that it works midin edus, therefore it's more formidable, it's stronger, less vulnerable to a taina of error. And therefore, the Orz Aruah thinks that it won't make a difference. Midiraisa, there is still not a requirement of Kiyam Shtaros Midirabanan, because Reish Lakish Midiraisa still stands strong. Now, the tweak that Rav Rosenzweig likes to point out, as we stated before, is that no, it could be that actually everybody agrees that it's both Eidos and it's Umdina. You just need to explain it. So I think you'd say for Victor Cohn that he thinks it could be in general that the Umdina will catapult into being Eidos, but as we said before, what we call 2A, he might just be very, very sensitive to the application of the particular Umdinas in each and every case. So the idea that I said that the Umdina is the Iker, or really the Koveya, so he'll say that if it's being challenged by a Baal or by Edom saying that it's forged, that's going to undermine the entire thing, the whole thing falls away, even though it could be in general, it does work as Eidos. And similarly, the Orz Aruah. The Orz Aruah might think that it's working like Eidos here, as he does sound in a few places, but it certainly still needs to be based off a plausible Umdina, as we said before. It's just that he thinks that the Eidos is the Iker. So long as you have this Umdina in general, the Umdina in general gets off the ground, the catapults into Eidos, and then we'll say that it'll work here, even though in this specific case, the Umdina is being undermined. Okay, so that's Nafkamina number one. Nafkamina number two.
Sorry, just to clarify, Rebbe thought that the Pshat in Rebbe Victor, it's called Rebbe Mordechai, and the Orz Aruah was like the Rav Chaim-esque model where there's Eidos and Umdina.
It could be, yeah.
Or that it's a possibility, but you could explain it that way, but that's not necessarily what they meant.
I mean, that's his preferred way to explain it, I think. Yeah. Okay, so that's Nafkamina number one within this discussion of Victor Cohn and the Orz Aruah. And the next few Nafkamina that we're going to talk about are really primarily within the Shita of the Orz Aruah and the Shach, who, as we just mentioned, think that when there's an error regarding the authenticity of the Shtar, it doesn't matter. Kiyam Shtaros is still in the requirement Midir Rabbanan. The question is, will they ever give in to Rav Victor Cohn? Will they ever say that Kiyam Shtaros actually is indeed a requirement to Midiraisa? So that brings us to Nafkamina number two. Nafkamina number two is the case of Matzah Shtar Baderech. Would the Shita of the Orz Aruah agree with the Rav Victor Cohn in such a case, where you find a Shtar lying in the street, you see Edom signed off on it, in the case that we're going to discuss such a Shtar, it happens to be a Shtar Kedushin. And the question is, will they give in that case? And the Ramah in Eben Ezer Simon Membe's Siv Dalet indeed does say, in that case, that Kiyam Shtaros would be Midiraisa. Now, he actually, ironically, doesn't even mention whether or not there's an Eror HaBaal or Eror HaEdim regarding the authenticity of the Shtar, but based off the Darkei Moshe, it seems that that is the case that he's referring to. The question is, will we agree in this case that Kiyam Shtaros is a requirement Midiraisa? The Ramah says that it is. And the Shach and the Ktos seem to agree. The question is, how exactly do we understand this? If it really works as Eidos in general, albeit based off a plausible Umdina, but it works as Eidos, so then why would just the fact that you found it in the street make a difference? So the Pashup Shot seems to be that they'd give in this case to say that there's a requirement with the Eidos for Kiyam Shtaros, because even though Reish Lakish might be based off Eidos, that's exactly the point. The fact that it's still based off a plausible Umdina, and in this case, the plausible Umdina just never gets off the ground. So this could either be, it could be that they just think that it's all about umdana, or it could be that they think that it's edus based off the umdana. And even if this mahalach, this camp in general, thinks that the edus is the ikker, whether the specific umdana is good or not, again, as we mentioned, there are certain cases where it's undeniable that when the umdana falls away, the edus falls away. And that's what you need to say here as well, that the umdana never gets off the ground. Now, why does the umdana never get off the ground in such a case when you find a shtar lying on the road with no one holding it? So there's different formulations in these poskim, the shach and the ktos. The shach seems to say in a way in which there won't be the umdana because, we'll say in this case, maybe people are willing to forge the shtar because no one's actually going to know who wrote it. So it's not going to be embarrassing or shameful to do that. And the ktos has a little bit of different formulation where he says that we don't have a cheskas kashrus when you find the shtar on the ground because it doesn't belong to one particular person. And only an individual has the cheskas kashrus of lo chatzav inish lezyufe, but when it comes to the broad, you know, world in general, obviously there are people that forge shtaros, so it could be that this shtar that you found was indeed forged. So that's the idea that it's the umdina that is the main factor here, even if it can catapult itself into eidos in most cases. And an additional nakuda here is that Rav Rosenzweig mentioned that even in addition to the umdina, something that the poskim here don't mention, the eidos part itself also might not be so applicable, because again, for Reish Lakish to work as eidos, it's the idea of being biyad balashtar biyad tofes hashtar, being read into this blank check by the tofes hashtar biyad balashtar. And in this case, when you just find the shtar on the ground, so of course it's not biyad balashtar, it's not biyad anybody, in which case, in addition to the umdana part being very, very questionable, even the eidos part is super questionable. Okay, so that's nafkamina number two. Nafkamina number three. Would the orzura and the shach agree that kiyam shtaros would be midiraisa, let's say in a case of error habal or error eidim, when we're not dealing with a shtar, but rather we're dealing with ksav yad? A case where the Baal wrote something, not the Baal, let's say, the Malve, or the husband, wrote up the shtar, wrote up the ksav yad by himself, and it's not signed off by Eri Chasima. So in that case, would we say that kiyam shtaros would be midiraisa? Would the orzur and the shach give in? So the shach indeed says, yes, that case of ksav yad, we do say kiyam shtaros is a requirement midiraisa. And the ksos vehemently disagrees. And the question is, why? What's going on here? What exactly is the Nekudas HaMachlokas? So it goes back to the same question. It sounds like here the Ksos thinks that Shtar and Reish Lakish is all about Umdina. Because in this, right, approach number one, as we said earlier, because if you're sensitive to the Eidos component at all, so you should really, really consider being Mechalik between a regular Shtar with Eidich HaSima and Ksav Yad. The fact that the Ksos doesn't entertain that at all, and also the Lashonos that he uses, it clearly sounds that he's very, very focused on the Umdina alone. And yet, at least in this Nafkamina, there's no mention or acknowledgement of the Eidus component. Well, the Shach could say that we do care about the Eidus component when it comes to Reish Lakish and Shtar, and for various reasons, that will not apply to Ksav Yad, which goes back to something that we mentioned earlier in the year, which I don't want to get into right now, but there's a lot of basis based off specifically Shitas HaRambam in the Rif that the Eidus status of Shtar is specifically predicated upon the signatures of Eri Chasima, and saying that it works as a blank check of Eidus, and that same power of Eidus will not apply to Ksav Yad, where there are no Eidim. So that's Nafkamina number three. Nafkamina number four. Would the Or Zaruah and the Shach agree that Kiyam Shtaros is midiraisa in a case where we don't know about the Eidim Bechlal? So the not just the fact that the Baal of the Eidim are being Ma'arer, that this Shtar is forged, but additionally, it happens to be that in Beis Din, there's nobody who has any clue who these Eidim are. They've never heard of these people. They don't recognize these names. They have no idea. So would we give in that case and say that for sure Kiyam Shtaros would be midiraisa? Says the Nesivos, yes. And the question again is why? So it sounds like the Nesivos is focused on the particular umdina that is going on in each and every specific case. And therefore, again, this goes back to what we're calling before approach 2b, that the Eidos might be the ikker, but In this case, it still could be that we very much care about the particular umdina. So that umdina will not apply as equally when we don't know who the Eidim are bechlal, because the umdina just won't get off the ground. And Rav Rosenzweig argued that it actually could be in this case, we will disagree with the Ktos, that there's no difference, that in this case, you could say, like the Orzur and the Shach think more generally, that the general umdina could be koveya, and that even on this particular case, the umdana is a little bit weaker. As we said with approach 2a, the general umdana can now aid us to be koveya. I think that issue yesh lefalpel whether or not you're going to say that this umdana is strong enough or not. Okay, so and let's just finish off the final nafkamina before we just move on to the other shitas Rambam. And yeah, I'll get you in a second. And the question is another case where we're asking about where the Orzur and the Shach will capitulate and say that Kiyam Shtar is a requirement midi araisa. Will they agree in a case where the Baal Hashtar, the Tofes Hashtar, does not respond to the Er HaBaal, the Er HaEdim? So here, the Magid Mishnah on that Rabbam that we mentioned, the Nochos Gerishin Parak Zayin Halacha Beis, indeed says that if we have this case where the woman is holding a get, and the Baal comes along and says, the husband comes along and says that it's forged, and then the woman does not respond to anything, says the Magid Mishnah, in that case, we will for sure say that Kiyam Shtaros is Midiraisa. Even if you think in general the error does not necessitate Kiyam Shtaros on a Diraisa level, and it's only Midirabanon, in this case, when the woman holding the get does not respond, it will. And the Beis Shmuel, in Kufam Aleph, Sif Katan Ayin, argues, no way. It should not make a difference at all. The Beis Shmuel is very confused. Why exactly would it make a difference if the one holding the shtar responds or not? And the way that we analyze this goes back to this same very, very broad question. If the Beis Shmuel thinks that it doesn't make a difference whether or not she responds at all, it sounds like he's much, much more focused on the umdina aspect, which, yeah, the umdina aspect will not change at all whether the Baal Ashtar, the Tofes Ashtar, the one holding the shtar, responds or not. Of course, the validity of the shtar shouldn't make a difference whether or not she responds, unless you say there's something like a reisa without her responding, but I think that'd be a little bit hard to say. So the Beis Shmuel seems to definitely be focusing a lot on the umdina. To me, it kind of sounds a lot like approach one, that it's all about the umdina, because he doesn't really acknowledge the edus part bechal when he talks about it. But if Rosenzweig thought that maybe for the Magid Mishnah, if you want to focus on the Reish Lakish component, whether it's 2a or 2b or just 2 in general, just focusing on the edus component specifically, then there could certainly be a case that the woman holding the shtar needs to respond, because using the shtar as edus means that you have to read a narrative into this blank check of edus, which of course means reading a narrative. The one holding onto the shtar needs to utilize the shtar by talking and by presenting something in the name of the edus of a shtar. Okay, so that's just like five quick nafkamina within our sugya of Kiyam Shtaros Diraisa Derabanan of this much more broad and general question about what the nature is of shtar and Reish Lakish more generally. Yeah, Ariel.
We talked at some point about maybe like the difference between in umdina in a particular case and like yeah. Some general maybe more like chazaka type of din. And as like
yes, that's what I was referring to with 2a and 2b, which is that there's the idea that shtar and Reish Lakish work as edus, but predicated on the plausible umdina. But even within that, I'm saying there are like two offshoots, meaning it could be that. Not really two offshoots, it's more a question of like, just are you very, very sensitive to how good the umdina is in each particular case, or are you not? So that's, I think that's what you're referring to. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Okay. So those are the nafkamina when it comes to this question of Kiyam Shtaros Midiraisa Midirabanan. And now, just finally, I want to run through quickly the analysis that we gave on the Shitas HaRambam, and then finally the analysis we gave on how Rav Avigdor Cohen and maybe Shitas HaRambam will explain the Gemara Gittin Daf Vav. Okay. So first, let's just quickly run through the Shitas HaRambam and Hilchos Gerishin, Parag Zayin, Halacha Beis. So just to quickly read the Lashon of the Rambam, because it's going to be important for the Pshatim, the Rambam there says that if a woman is holding a get and is challenged by the Baal, by the husband, so says the Rambam, Vim lonis kaim v'lo nodu eid of klal, if you're not Mekayim the Shtar, if we don't know who these Edom are, Tetze v'avlad mamzer, she is not allowed to remarry. If she does remarry and she has children with a second husband, those children are mamzerim. Because Sha'arei ena migureshes, she was not migureshes bechlal from the first husband. The get was totally batel, it sounds like, kipshuto. It was not chal at all. Then says the Rambam something a little bit mysterious and unclear. He says, avad haget, but if the get is lost, harizu suffik migureshes. Then we'll say that her gerishin with the first husband is a suffik migureshes. Unclear exactly what that means. And the Nosei Kalim address it. The big question on this Rambam that the Ramach poses right away, he's like, what exactly is going on in this Rambam? We're going to say that midiraisa, this get is not chal at all, that the get is batel, that it's tetzei v'avlad mamzer. What's going on here? Is the Rambam holding like a Avigdor Cohen, that Kiyam Shtaros is midiraisa? The Ramach does not understand it at all. He completely leaves the Rambam mitzarachim. So the question is, what exactly is the Rambam holding here? Is he holding like a Avigdor Cohen, or is he not? And if he's not, so then how do you explain it? So the first mahalach is to say, in a chinami, yes, the Rambam is in fact holding like Avigdor Cohen. The Beis Shmuel that we referenced before in Kufem Aleph Sifkatan Ayin, indeed says Vinirli Mikan Muhav Desfirle La Rambam Leposkim Elu Kagos Mordechai De Kedushin. The Shita of Victor Cohn is exactly what the Rambam is holding. He happens to connect it with the I don't want to get into this too much, but he happens to connect it with the Shitas Rambam in general that we talked about earlier in the year when it comes to Mipiyam Vlomi Pi Ksavam, the Rambam in Eidos Gimel Dalid. Now there the Rambam, if you read a Kipshuto, as the Beis Shmuel does, the Rambam sounds like in general, Shtar actually only has the capacity to work ever, Midir Rabbanon. Reish Lakish only has power, Midir Rabbanon. So says the Beis Shmuel, it just works out very well to say this pshat that the Rambam holds like a Rav Victor Cohn. It just happens to be very convenient because the correlation between those things is that if you think that Reish Lakish has a lot less power and it only works on a Midir Rabbanon level, so then it makes, you don't have to say this, but it would make a lot of sense to then say that the requirement of Kiyam Shtaros is only going to be Midir Rabbanon. Because if you give less weight to the power of Reish Lakish, so then you would probably be more inclined to require more out of the Kiyam, and to say that it's required on a DRISA level. Okay, so that's the first basic understanding of the Rambam, that it's like Pashup Shat, that it's based off Ishita and Eidos in Eidos Gimel Dalet. Yeah, I'll get to you in a second. So that's the first Mahalach in the Rambam. And then the second Mahalach in the Rambam, I think the way like most understand him is that no, certainly not. As the Ramach assumed, the Rambam is not agreeing with the Rav Victor Cohn at all. And there's different levels of Peirushim here on how far they lav dafka or limit this Rambam to not really fully saying like Rav Victor Cohn. And let's take it Mikal El HaKavid. So, or Mikavid El HaKal, depending on how you look at it. The first mahalach is the Taz, Nevena Ezer, Kofem Aleph, Sif Katan, Nun Gimel. The Taz totally lav dafka is the entire thing. He just says, Venira Demamzer Safi Kamar. He's like, the Rambam doesn't really mean the get is totally batel. He just means that when the husband is ma'arer, that this get was forged, so it just kind of raises eyebrows and we say that it's a suffik. Not exactly sure how he reads it when he says, Tetzev Avlad Mamzer. But I'm just not so familiar with that phenomenon in general, what we mean by suffik mamzer, but it sounds like he's lav dafking the Rambam completely. Okay, so that's the shita and perish of the Taz in this Rambam. The second way to explain the Rambam is that he does think to some capacity that Kiyam Shtaros is midiraisa, something that mentioned by Rav Victor Cohn, but it's not really like Rav Victor Cohn at all because the scope of the Rambam is very, very limited. And this can be taken, as we saw, in two directions. So one is the Nesivus in Simon Mem Vav Sif Katan Hey, where he emphasizes the line that we just read on the Rambam of V'lo Nodai Edim Klal. Says the Nesivus, this happens to just be a case where we don't know who the Edim are B'chlal. It's not the fact that any time there's an Eir HaBaal or Eir HaEdim maybe, that we're going to say that the Shtar is undermined and that we require Kiyam Shtaros Midiraisa. No, it just happens to be in this case, as we mentioned before, we don't know who the Edim are. And as we said in the name of the Nesivus, the umdina of Shtar just doesn't get off the ground in that case because we could very well say in that case that it's going to be forged. And therefore, only in that case, the Rambam will say Kiyam Shtaros is a requirement midiraisa. That's the Nesivus' pshat in limiting the Rambam. The Magen Mishnah as well, in a parallel fashion, does limit the Rambam, albeit in a little bit of a different way. The Magen Mishnah thinks that the Rambam thinks Kiyam Shtaros is midiraisa, but again, not really like Rav Victor Cohn at all, because the Rambam only holds it in one case. And that one case, says the Magen Mishnah, is when, as we mentioned, the Toves Hashtar, in this case the woman who's holding on to her get, doesn't respond to anything. In which case you have a Tainas Bari done by the husband against the woman who doesn't respond to anything. Says the Magen Mishnah, that's the only case where the Rambam will tell you that there's a requirement of Kiyam Shtaros Midiraisa, but in general he'll always say Kiyam Shtaros is only a requirement Midir Rabbanon, and we explained the Svar for that previously. Okay, and then there's one final parish within Shitas Rambam, and that is a little bit closer to Rav Victor Cohn, but still not 100%, and that is that when there is an Eir HaBaal saying that the Shtar is forged, the requirement of Kiyam Shtaros there is in fact Midiraisa, as Rav Victor Cohn holds. It's just that it's somewhat limited in that it will only apply to a specific person doing that error. We just said it's the Eir HaBaal, but does that mean any time that a Baal Dover comes to the case and says that it's forged, it's forged? So no. And this, Rav Rosner kept quoting Rav Soloveitchik, would say that it's Dafka the Eir HaBaal. I don't want to get into so much why that is, but the Rav had a lot of evidence that there's a special relationship between a husband and a get, more so than any other Baal Dovar connected with their Shtar. Specifically, the Baal, the husband in this case, carries a lot of weight, a lot of power. So Dafka, he is able to necessitate the requirement of Kiyam Shtaros Midiraisa. And the Griz expanded it a little bit more. He said that it's not just a husband, it's any Baal Dovar Baal Shtar, like a husband, but it could be, you know, a Lova as well. But he does not think that the Eidim have the capacity to undermine the validity of the Shtar and require Kiyum Shtaros Midiraisa, only a Baldavar. But that's the closest you're going to get in this camp to get the Rambam to being like a Rav Igdor Cohn without actually saying he's like a Rav Igdor Cohn. Okay, so that's the Rambam. And then finally, I want to talk about the question on Rav Igdor Cohn posed by the postgame from Gideon Daf Vav Amud Aleph. But yeah, you had a question.
Just the Beis Shmuel matching up the Rambam with the Shita and Edus Gimel Dalet.
Yeah.
How does that work? I mean, how can you say that Shtaros require Kiyum Midoraisa, but Shtaros never work Midoraisa?
Right. So I think there's another point of the Beis Shmuel where he says that question also. He's like, the whole sugya is difficult for the Rambam. I think the point is just at least once you hold the Rambam, so then it's easier to swallow the fact that he'll tell you that Kiyum Shtaros, or I'll say in the opposite direction. If you're trying to, the way the Beis Shmuel actually says it, is that if you're trying to figure out Pshat in the Rambam in Zion Beis, so if you know Gimel Dalet, so then the easiest thing to say in Zion Beis is that he holds like a Rav Igdor Cohn. That's the way he says it. He's responding to the Maggid Mishnah. He's like, don't give this fancy pshat about the woman not responding. He's like, if you know Gimel Dalet and you understand Gimel Dalet Kipshuto, so then you don't need to say anything more. But I agree with you, meaning, yeah, the whole Rambam is very difficult because that's the Ramban's question. How do you read the whole sugya and get in Daf Gimel? If you read the Rambam Kipshuto, meaning, yeah, it's very difficult. He'll have to say that it works. He didn't, some say Afkinu, but it's not clear what the Beis Shmuel will say to answer that question. But yeah, the whole sugya is very difficult. Okay, so that's Shitas Rambam. And then finally, let's discuss the very, very powerful question that the poskim ask against the Shita of Rav Igdor Cohn. We noted that the Or HaZeruah asks this question a little bit more agav. He doesn't really mention it as a question. He kind of just throws it in as a line. But the Shach asks it directly on Rav Igdor Cohn. And the question is, how does Rav Igdor Cohn deal with the Gemara in Gidin Davav Amud Aleph Amud Beis, which seems to say pretty explicitly, it brings up a case where Befanei Nechtab actually will beat an Irur Habal. When the husband challenges the validity of the get of the shtar, it sounds like Befanei Nechtab will win. The question is, if every single time someone protests that the shtar is forged, and that creates a requirement of Kiyum Shtaros Midiraisa for Rav Igdor Cohn, so how could Befanei Nechtab accomplish that requirement of Kiyum Shtaros Midiraisa, when after all, Befanei Nechtam to begin with is only a Takana Midirabanan? How could it ever fulfill the standard of Kiyum Shtaros Midiraisa? And it's a very, very strong question on Rav Igdor Cohn, how Befanei will be working. And I think everyone's noted, even though we're going to try and answer the question, it doesn't sound like any of the answers are super satisfying. I mean, Yesh L'Falpel and some of them, how good they are. But overall, that seems to be the trend. It's definitely very difficult, no matter what you say. But with that being said, so let's just quickly run through four answers that we gave to this question. So just to knock it out right away, the first answer, or camp of answers, that's very simple to say for Rav Igdor Cohn is something that we just mentioned in the Shitas Rambam, which is that the whole Shita is very, very limited. So this won't really work as much for Rav Igdor Cohn, but at least within the Rambam, if you have any of these limitations of Kiyum Shtaros Midiraisa that we mentioned before, so let's say the Nesivos, who thinks that it's only really when we don't know about the Eidim, the Maggid Mishnah, it's only when the woman holding the get is silent. So according to those explanations, you could just answer this question very simply, for the Rambam at least, that Kiyum Shtaros Midiraisa is limited to very specific cases, and the case on Davav is just not one of those cases. Let's say it's not a problem about the identity of the Eidim being ambiguous. You don't run into a problem of the woman being silent. You don't have those problems there. Let's say the woman responds. Let's say we know the Eidim are, so you don't have that problem. So that's the first answer, very, very simple answer that you can give. The second answer is based off the transition in the Gemara when it invokes Medak Dayak, the very, very strong Umdina and the basis for us to say that Befanai is effective. And that is the Pnei Yoshua and Gidin, there on Davav, at least in his first Pshad, the Lecha Mishnah brings up it as a Havamina, and he basically says that once we bring in the concept of Medak Dayak, namely that every single Shliach is super, super careful to make sure that they know all the facts of the case and that they know that the Shtar is authentic when they embark on this journey to bring a get from Medina Sayyam. So, says the Pnei Yoshua, once you have Medak Dayak, somehow that has the ability to gain a status of Ne'amanas Midiraisa, which will be effective in fulfilling this requirement of Kiyum Shtaros Midiraisa. And the way he says it, he keeps invoking Lashonos of the Sheet of the power of Chazal and the Rabbanon. So it's a little bit unclear what he means. He says, "Ro chachamim lahamin l'shliach levad hechad mi'adaktayik v'hainu mishum takanos agunos." So samcha as far as zu af makom esher midiraisa. So it's a little bit unclear what exactly he's saying, but obviously he's contending with the basic problem, which is how can we give this thing a nemanus midiraisa when it's only mitakin to begin with as a dinder abanan? So there are a couple ways to explain it, but I think Rav Rosenzweig's preferred approach is that in general, when it comes to the realm of eidos and nemanus, there's things that are objectively good. Midiraisa, there are things that are objectively bad, midiraisa, and then we have kind of have like this gray area in the middle where you have things that might work, might not work. In certain cases, they might work. In certain cases, they might not work. And we leave it up to Chazal, the Chachamim, to kind of be koveya and be selective for us as to which ones work and in which cases. And that's how we explain the Pnei Yoshua here, that Chazal, because of Takanos Agunos, and I guess based off how compelling they felt Medak Daik was, they decided Medak Daik has a Nemanos midiraisa. Okay. So that is answer number two for the Rambam. Answer number three is based off the combining forces of Reish Lakish and Eid Echad. The answer given by the Noda Behuda and Evan Ezer, Simon Pehe, where the Noda Behuda basically says that the only reason why in the Gemara to begin with we have all these difficulties is based off the Shakavataria and Gideon before the Shakavataria that we discussed. Namely, there's only a problem with Eid Echad here because Eid Echad Nemen Bisurin is not applicable to Gidin where there's a Cheskes Esther. Namely, where the woman is married already, we do not apply the concept of Eid Echad Nemen Bisurin. But says the Noda Behuda, I actually think this is a really, really good shot. I mean, it's a little bit hard to like read it into the lines of the Gemara, but I think it's a really great shot. Namely, that the Gemara, when it invokes Reish Lakish, is actually going back on that. When the Gemara invokes Reish Lakish, the Gemara is invoking Reish Lakish to tell you, or at least when it says Reish Lakish, it will help you to say that the original Cheskas Esser goes away, and that actually will allow us to bring back the original solution that we had, namely Eidach Nehman Bisurin. Eidach Nehman Bisurin was only ineffective because of the Cheskas Esser, but once you have Reish Lakish, so then we don't have that Cheskas Esser anymore. The way he says it is that it goes from like a cheskas esser to only like he says miklal cheskas esser lachlal safik umigareh micheskas esser eshesesh b'shuv eidach anamun min haTorah. So somehow it kind of like dilutes the bivadai cheskas esser to being a little bit weaker to a safik, and that will allow us to go back and to say that eidach anamun befanai anamun midiraisa, it will work against ir habal. Then finally, I'm just going to do the last answer. The last answer is given by the Beis Shmuel, who we've referenced a few times at this point. The Beis Shmuel here, I think in contrast to the other ones, I think it's like the next piece, in Kuf Mem Beis, Sif Katan Beis. Says the Beis Shmuel, an answer that I think is very unclear and honestly very difficult, and he doesn't really explain much. It's a phenomenon that we've pointed out that comes up in a few places. The idea of the Beis Shmuel is just that somehow, if you say b'fanai nechtam, b'fanai nechtam, before the husband shows up in his ma'arer, somehow that makes the get shtar, in this case, mekuya midiraisa, and then once the baal shows up, so, yeah, he'll necessitate kiyam shtaros midiraisa, but the shtar is already mekuya midiraisa, somehow. Again, it's very difficult because b'fanai nechtam is only instituted to begin with as a din derabanan, so it's hard to say that just because it was completed before the baal showed up, that will say that it's mekuya midiraisa. It's a little bit difficult. He doesn't really explain much, but that is the answer for the Beis Shmuel. So that's just quickly running through four answers that we gave to this question that's asked against Rav Victor Cohen, potentially against the Rambam. And that is the basic rundown of the sigya of Kiyam Shtaros Midiraisa Midirabanan. And hopefully in a subsequent Chazar Ashir, we'll discuss more the next part of the sigya, which is the self-protective mechanism of Shtar, and how different tainas and different situations have that self-protective mechanism applying itself differently. Shkar.